Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Kuf Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins 6 lines from the top of Daf Kuf Zayin. We are in the middle of a general discussion concerning Netilas Yodayim, the washing of one's hands. We have Mayim Rishonim, that one washes before the meal. We've discussed Mayim Achronim, that one washes after the meal. And we've also mentioned something called Mayim Emtsoyim. As we continue our discussion, we start a new point in this general topic of hand washing. We have a Nosei Mivneh heading in the outside margin. The Nosei represents the topic, and Mivneh a structural note. At times in our Shas Ozer, we combine the two into one note. In this case, you see a triangle featured in the outside margin. These triangles appear in the Gemara itself. And each time you see the triangle, as you scan down the daf, you will see 4 of them. They enclose comments made by Rava. So we have written here, Memros Shel Rava. These are comments regarding Rava, Be'inyan Makoros, V'kelim Haksherim L'Netilas Yadayim. Sources of water and vessels that are useful or kosher, acceptable in the realm of Netilas Yadayim. As we turn to the 6th line from the top, the Gemara, Omar Rava, Hai Arisa Dedaloi Ein Notlin Mimenu L'Yadayim. Delo Asu Mikoyach Gavra. The Rashi explains that Arisa de Daloi is either a pipe or a ditch that serves as a conveyor of water to fields for the purpose of irrigation. Now we say conveyor of water because these pipes or ditches are not actually attached to a body of natural occurring water. What is done is these ditches, the Arisa de Daloi, are ditches that run alongside and throughout fields. A person draws water using a pail from a source of water, let's say a river, the river being the constant naturally occurring body of water, and takes the pail and then pours the water that he drew from the river into this tsinor, into this tsinor is the term Rashi uses, this pipe or ditch that eventually serves as the source of water for the fields. So the scenario that Rava is saying here is not acceptable would be if, let us say, someone pours water into the ditch, and in time, if we pour enough pails of water, so there then develops a natural flow of water from the, natural is not maybe a good word, but an accumulation of water appears in these pipes as a result of all the pailfuls that I poured into it. If I were then to immerse my hands into this ditch and think that the water is going to accomplish Netilas Yadayim, so Rava tells us it's not so. And the reason for that is, it says, the Gemara says, Delo Osu Mikoyach Gavra. The water, as it runs over my hands, is not coming as a result of human force. In other words, the ditch was filled up with pailfuls of water, but the flow of water in those ditches is a function of gravity. The water simply flows in a natural course after the ditch has been filled up. So as a result of the water not coming mikoach gavra because of human force, as of course opposed to our standard practice of taking a cup, filling it with water, and then pouring the water over my hands, that pouring action is a result of a person tilting the cup and causing the water to flow out of it. However, the Gemara goes on, v'imikriv legabi davlo, if a person is using this ditch for netilas yadayim and he happens to be very close to the point that the water is being poured in, the pailfuls are poured in, and he puts his hands in the ditch as the water is being poured out of the pail, and the water then runs over his hands that are right there, so the ka'asu mikoach gavra, the water in that case is coming as a result of human force, notlin mimenu liyodayim, so then that will accomplish netilas yodayim. Now another scenario involving the ditch is as follows: v'i bazia davlo b'koines mashke melef lifei umatbil bo es hayodayim. We will explain this. Prior to explaining this line, we should make a point that we find in Rashi regarding the first scenario of the ditch. We mentioned that if you're not near the point that the water is poured in pailful, then it doesn't work because the water doesn't come mikoach gavra, it doesn't come as a result of human force pouring the water. There's another point that Rashi mentioned, and that the hands in the ditch don't work either as tevilas yadayim, immersing one's hands, which was an option, let us say, when you're dealing with a mikveh. You can immerse your hands in a mikveh, and that will accomplish the same thing as netilas yadayim that's accomplished with the pouring of the water from a cup. That is because when you immerse your hands in a mikveh, the mikveh has the required quantity of 40 sa'ah. Sa'ah is the name of a measure. If one thinks that tevilas yadayim in a ditch would be effective there, he is mistaken, because these ditches did not contain the required amount of water, the 40 sa'ah. Hence, if you're at a distance from the point the pailful is poured in, just having your hands in the ditch filled with water will not be effective. However, and now that brings us to this line that we just read, and we'll read it again. This line that we read in the Gemara describes a pail that is being poured into the ditch, the pail having water in it drawn from a river. However, if the pail has a hole in it, the hole size is called koines mashke. That's a hole large enough that if you were to partially submerge the pail, water would enter. Koines means to enter. Water would enter the hole and fill the pail. That, in this case, if you have a hole in the pail, that on the one hand is water is pouring out, the water that you drew in this pail is being poured into the ditch, and on the other hand, or the other end, you've got this hole in the bottom of the pail that from which water is also flowing out back into the river. That would create a sort of, we'll call it an artificial type of bridge, an arc of water, a continuous connection of water from the river via the pail into the ditch, so that you can say that the water in the ditch is in effect connected to the river. Now the river has in it the necessary 40 sa'ah, it has the necessary quantity of water, or on the other hand, the river itself, if it's a river coming from, let's say, a live spring source of water, the river itself would be an acceptable source of tevila. So the pail with the hole in its bottom, while being poured into the ditch, is also connected to the river. Now, you'll notice we have a crude illustration of this, an attempt to illustrate this in the margin, where you see something labeled tsinor, the ditch, and you have a pail with water pouring out of it into the ditch, and also a hole with an indication of water flowing back into the river that's also indicated in this diagram. So that there is a simultaneous connection between the river and the ditch, a water connection, thereby enabling me to use the ditch as a source of tevila, of immersing one's hands. Let us read this in the Gemara. V'i bazia davla b'kaines mashke, if the bazia means a hole in the davla, in the pail, the size of kones mashke, then melef lifei, mean that means a connection. There is a connection between the water that's now in the ditch and the river. Umakbil bo esayadayim. And then the ditch becomes a kosher source for tevilas yodayim. Even though the ditch itself doesn't have 40 saw, it's connected to a body of water that has the necessary requirements for tevila. So it's considered as if it is attached to the body of water that would have been kosher in itself, making the ditch now kosher for this process of tevilas yodayim. It would then seem to, it stands to reason, and then you don't have to be, if you want to use the ditch, then you can use it for immersing your hands, even if you're not near the point that the water is actually being poured in. Continuing in the Gemara, V'omar Rava Kli Shenikev B'Kines Mashke Ein Notlin Mimenu Liadayim. This is a new case, even though we're using a term that we just saw in the previous point. If you have a vessel that you're using for netilas yadayim, means pouring the water over your hands, but the vessel happens to have a hole in it, the size of koines mashke, that renders the vessel a non-vessel. A non-vessel as far as the halach is concerned. As we've mentioned many times in the past, Torah learning is involved with halachic definitions, not with physicality. So that physically it is a vessel, but it's not classified as a kli, which is the unit that was designed by the Rabbanan, that was established by the Rabbanan as being useful for accomplishing netilas yadayim. You'd have to have something called halachically classified as a kli. And if it has a hole in it, this size, called koines mashke, a hole that if the vessel were submerged partially in water, water would enter this hole, so it renders it a non-kli, and hence not acceptable for netilas yadayim. V'oma rova, kli she'ein boi revius. This comment of Rava brings us to a tat nosei we should have mentioned in the outside margin, a subtopic. This is, we have written on the side, kli she'ein bo revius mayim, a vessel that doesn't have a revius. Revius is a certain liquid measure, a quantity. It lacks this quantity known as a revius. Then our Gemara will deal with mahu lito mimenu. Can it be used for netilas yadayim? So going back now to the Gemara, v'yomar Rava, kli she'ein boi revius, a kli that does not have this amount of water revius in it, ein notli mimenu liyodayim, then it's not acceptable for netilas yodayim. The Gemara asks, eini, is this really so? V'yomar Rava. Well, just to review the point once again, Rava says a kli, if it doesn't have a quantity of revius of water in it, then if it's lacking that quantity in it, even though it may be a large vessel, but the minimum amount of water a revius is lacking, you cannot use that for netilas yadayim. So the Gemara asks, Eini v'omar Rava, kli she'ein machzik revius ein notlin mimenu liyodayim. Rava has been known to say that if the vessel is a very small vessel where it cannot hold a revius, imagine a thimble full of water. So that thimble full of water, the thimble, is a vessel that is not acceptable for netilas yadayim because of its small size. We can infer from this, though, ha machzik, if, however, the kli, the vessel, were a large vessel, afagav the less bay, even if it doesn't have the quantity of a revius, it would be acceptable. The Gemara answers that these two comments of Rava are actually not at odds with one another. Lo kashya, ha lechad, ha letrei. If you're dealing with one person washing, then we will tell you that if it lacks the liquid quantity, it's not acceptable. If you're talking about two people that are washing, and if we focus for a moment on the second person, you can have a situation where the second person is having water poured over his hands and it's less than a revius in quantity, and yet he fulfills his requirement. That's because there was someone there before, and when the Matilas Yadayim started, there was in fact a revius. There was a large kli that had one revius. What we're illustrating here is that one revius of water is good for a couple of people. Therefore, the only requirement then is that you started off with a vessel that was machzik a revius. It was a large enough vessel. It contained a revius. One person already had a partial, a small amount of water poured over his hands, part of the original revius. Even though now this vessel that's large doesn't have a revius of water in it, it still is kosher because he's the second person. The Gemara offers a source for this, Desanya. The Brisa tells us, May Revius, a liquid quantity of water of a Revius. One Revius of water is sufficient for even, not just one person, even two people. Omerle Rav Sheshis Lameimar. Kabdisu Amona. Rav Sheshis asks Amemar, are you makbid? Are you insistent on the vessel being complete? Mona is a vessel, and the intention here is the vessel should be without a hole in it. Amalei in, yes, we are insistent on the vessel being without a hole for Netilas Yadayim. Another question Rav Sheshis asks, Achazusa? Achazusa is the appearance. Are you also insistent on the liquid having a water appearance? In other words, it should look like water. The water should look like water. Amalei in, yes, we are insistent that the water used should look like water, not have, let's say, not be very, let's say, white paint poured in it. It wouldn't look like water anymore. Question: Ashiura, are you makbid on a revius? Amalei in, yes, we are makbid. We are insistent on there being a revius. Iko di Amri, another version: Ochi Amalei. That thusly he said, Amona v'achazuso kabdinon, ashiuro lo kabdinon. We are makbid on the vessel being complete, on the appearance as well. However, on the quantity, we're not makbid. Desanya. Now, why are we not makbid on the quantity? May revius notnu l'dayim le'echad v'afilu l'shnayim. The source says that a revius is good even for two people. Well, the second person, how much water is getting poured over his hands? Less than a revius. Hence, I learn from here that you don't need to have a revius. The Gemara now says, Velohi, this is not so. In other words, to say that there is no insistence on a revius carte blanche, that's not accurate. Shiny Hossam, the case that this source was referring to is different. Mishum de ka'osu mishiore tara. There was a revius. Shiore Tara means the residue or the remnant of purification. Purification means a quantity sufficient for purification. This source is describing that, in fact, there was a revius at the outset. So that to say, across the boards, there is no concern for shiur, like we have, that we dashed underline a shiur lo kapinon, that's not accurate. We are makbid on the shiur. In other words, there has to be an initial revius before you can talk about an acceptable netilas yadayim. It's true that if you started with a revius and you poured a little bit of that over first person's hands and there was some water left, that small amount would be acceptable. But once again, that's only because you started off with a revius. You can see with our markings, the dotted underline was used to emphasize the expression ashiura lo kaptinon. This became the focus of the Gemara's question and eventual answer. Askin Rav Yankiv min Nahar Pekod. Nahar Pekod is the name of a place. Rav Yankiv from Nahar Pekod. Askin means he established, he set up, he designed a natlo bas reviosa. A natlo is a glass vessel that had an official revius in it. And that was used for the community, that when anyone wanted to fashion a vessel and wanted to make it with the amount, the correct amount for Netilas Yadayim, they could go to Rav Yankiv's vessel and use that as the standard for making additional vessels. Askin Rav Ashi v'Hutzel. Hutzel is the name of a place. Rav Ashi likewise set up a model vessel, Kuza Bas Revisa. A kuza is an earthenware vessel containing a revius. And likewise, people would use that in measuring the vessels they wanted to make. That would be the official revius vessel in Hutzal. V'oma Rava, magufas chavis shetikna notlin mimeno liyodayim. A magufas chavis is a barrel, is a seal of a barrel. In other words, you have a barrel that contains whatever, wine, beer. They would seal the barrel with a, usually a clay layer that would be fashioned as a lid that would be used to seal the barrel. If you took this lid, and the lid apparently had a certain amount of thickness to it, it wasn't just a thin sheet of clay, but it had a certain amount of thickness to it. If you hollowed it out, that it could now be used as a vessel in and of itself, not just as a lid for another vessel, but now you're essentially changing its role. Tikna, you hollowed it out so that it would hold a revius. So notlin meno, that means you could use it. Even though originally when it was made, it wasn't made to hold water, you're hollowing it out and designating it as a vessel for netilas yadayim will be an acceptable change in role. Tanyo nami hochi. We have a Tanaic source that features this and some additional points as well. So the first line of this Tanaic source that you can see in a frame is our point. Magufas chavis shetikno notlin mimeno liodayim. Now, there's another point. Chemas ukfisha. These are different types of leather bottles or skin bottles, we call them, that were used for holding wine very often. Chemas ukfisha shetiknon notlin mehem liodayim. So if you designated these vessels, the chemas and kfisha, for netilas yadayim, and made sure that they hold the revius, they will be good for netilas yadayim. Sak v'kupa, these are other kinds of vessels. They are not used for holding water in general. In general, they sackcloth is usually made from hairs of a goat. So it's some type of material woven together forming a sack. A sack, the kupa. Afapi shemekablin, even if they happen to, let's say, tightly woven so that they would actually hold water, ein notlin mehem liodayim. They are not good. They are not useful or not good, not acceptable for netilas yadayim. And Rashi says, this ein melachton lemayim. They're not designed for holding water. Therefore, if they so happen to hold water, we won't accept it as a kosher vessel for netilas yadayim. We have a new discussion and a new marking as well that we see. We see a bow tie and a diamond shortly thereafter. If we look at the comments we have on the side, we have a mivne note, a structural note, indicating the role of the bow ties. In other words, the bow tie will continue on Omid Beis as well. We'll see a couple more there. These are Sidro Shel She'elos, a series of questions, be'inyan netilas yodayim. The Nosei Mivneh heading, the immediate topic at hand with its additional structural note dealing with the diamonds, is Nisyonos Lahachria She'ela. These are attempts to decide a question, Be'inyan Achila B'mapa, where Saviv Hayodayim, where a person takes a piece of cloth and wraps his hands in the cloth. Ha'im tzorech netila, by the wrapping of one's hands in the cloth, so his hands aren't going to come into direct contact with the food. Does that circumvent the need for netilas yadayim? The Gemara, Ibaya leho, mahu leechol b'mapo. Is it acceptable to eat food without having washed one's hands while his hands are wrapped in a cloth? Mi chayshinon dilma noga oiloi. Do we suspect that he might touch the food? or not. Or if we let us say, had this certain confidence that he would not touch the food, then this would be a method of eating, circumventing or alleviating the need for Netilas Yadayim. Toshma. So the diamond introduces an attempt to answer this question. This is what we are about to see as a source describing eating on the holiday of Sukkot. In general, when one would eat baked goods, breads and cakes in a on Sukkot, if he's going to eat an egg quantity, that's a size we call kebetza, a kebetza of ochel, of food, he is obligated to eat it in the sukkah. That's called achilas keva. However, if someone eats less than a kebetza, it's called achilas aroi. It's like a by chance eating, a snacking type eating. That kind of eating, even though it's praiseworthy to eat that amount as well in a sukkah, however, he's not obligated to eat it in a sukkah. There are some other halachas concerning this that will be featured in the source, but what we just said was simply the background from where this source is taken. The source reads as follows: Ukshenosnu lo l'Rabbi Tzadok, ochel pachos mikabetza, when Rabbi Tzadok was presented with food less than an egg in quantity, not lo b'mapo v'ochlo yichutz l'suka v'ein mevarech acharov. He would take it in a cloth and eat it outside the sukkah and not make a final bracha. He wouldn't recite a birchas hamazon over that amount of bread. This is less than a kebetza. My love, can we not infer from this, ha kebetza boy netila? If it would have been the significant amount of an egg quantity, a kebetza, then there would be a netila requirement. So even though he was using a mapa, so we see from here, if we were to stop at this point, if we were to use this as an answer, we would say that the use of mapa does not circumvent the need for netilas yadayim. The Gemara rejects this as a conclusion and says, Dilma, ha kebetza, it could be that the inference that we drew from the source that described less than a kebetza, and then we drew an inference, well, what if it were a complete betza? Boi sukkah uboi bracha. Then there would be a need for the sukkah, and there would be a need for a final bracha. However, it still would not require netila. So, at this point, we go on trying to conclude our question regarding the mapa. Toshma. De Shmuel ashkeche l'rav de ka'ochil b'mapa. Shmuel met Rav while Rav was eating with his hands wrapped in a cloth. Omarlei, Shmuel addresses Rav in wonderment and says, Avdin Kedain, do you eat thusly? Do you eat without doing Netilas Yadayim? So, from this, one would get the impression that, certainly as far as Shmuel is concerned, and it seems that what Shmuel is trying to reflect is a universal opinion, that you have to wash under all circumstances. So that the first diamond went in the direction of trying to show that you do need Netilas Yadayim, here too, we're trying to show that the mapa would not be a means of obviating, of circumventing the need for Netilas Yadayim. Omar Lei, Rav answers, you should know, I did do Netilas Yadayim. And you'll ask, why am I eating with a mapa? Daiti Kitsara Olai. I am a fastidious individual, and I don't like handling food with my hands, even if I washed them. So, at this point, it might be argued that from Rav's behavior, we can't determine what the role of a mapa would be if you were doing with other people. On the other hand, you have Shmuel's reaction seemed to indicate, as we said before, that you will need to have a Netilas Yadayim even if you are using a mapa. And Rav, in effect, said, listen, I did do Netilas Yadayim. So at the end of the day, everyone seems to be pointing in the direction of needing Netilas Yadayim. Kisolek Rabbi Zera Ashkechinu L'Rav Ami Rav Asi. When Rabbi Zera arrived in Israel, in the Eretz Yisrael, he found Rav Avi and Rav Asi, that happened to be Kohanim, to ka'achli bivloi chamsos. They were eating with their hands wrapped around with material. Bloi chamsos literally is chamsos are skin bottles, and these were worn out. Bloi means they were worn out, so they probably weren't so useful anymore as containers, but they were used in this case to wrap around their hands. So they were eating food with their hands wrapped around. Rabbi Zera, his first reaction was that they are doing this in order to avoid Netilas Yadayim. So Omar, Rabbi Zera said, Trei Gavri Ravavi, Kavasaychu, two great men like you, Litu, Bidarav Ushmuel, should make a mistake based on the story of Rav and Shmuel, namely the story we just read before, eating without Netila. But that wasn't the case in Rav and Shmuel. Ha Daitik Tzora Koma. Rav himself said that he had done Netila. So that if you, Rav Ami and Rav Asi, are eating with a mappa and not doing Netilas Yadayim because you had heard the story of Rav eating with a mappa, but Rav himself had done Netilas Yadayim. And his whole explanation for having his hands wrapped was because he was a sensitive and fastidious individual that didn't like handling food under all circumstances. So the question here is that, well, can we explain the behavior of Rav Ami and Rav Asi, who ostensibly were not Daiti Ketzora people? Why were they seemingly eating with hands wrapped and not having done the Netilas Yadayim? Well, Ishtamitze Ha Di Omar Rav Tachlifa Bar Avimir Mar Shmuel. Rabbi Zera, in raising his eyebrows regarding the behavior of Rav Ami and Rav Asi, forgot, or something eluded him. That's Ishtamitze, means it was forgotten from him, or it eluded him, the teaching of Rav Tachlifa, who quoted Shmuel, that said as follows, Hetiru mapo li'oichle truma, velo hetiru mapo li'oichle taros, Rav Ami, Rav Asi koyanim havu. We've dashed underlined the first part of this teaching, this law, that there was an allowance made. Hitiru mapo li'oichle truma. People who eat truma, who eats truma? Kohanim. A truma is a tithe that a person removes from his produce and gives to Kohanim. Kohanim are known as people that are more careful in general. They're called Kohanim Zrizenheim. They're more careful in their practices than the general population. That could be traced to the fact that they were always involved with trumas and with korbonas, items that necessitated a high level of guard, of awareness of what was going on around, because they could become ruined upon contact with tumah. So Kohanim are known as extra careful, Zrizenheim. Rav Ami and Rav Asi were Kohanim. As a result of this, Shmuel said that Ochle Truma, Kohanim, have a right, have an allowance, have a leniency, so to speak, to use the Mapa method of avoiding the need for Netilas Yadayim, a method that we would not allow for the general population, because in the case of the general population, even if their hands were wrapped, we are afraid that they'll come to touch the food barehanded. Kohanim, who were Zrizim, were not afraid of their coming to touch their food barehanded. So as a result of that, since we have a sense of security and confidence regarding Kohanim as being careful, they have an allowance to use the hand-wrapping method to avoid Netilas Yadayim. Now, the same allowance of wrapping one's hands for the eating of taros, Shmuel says, Lo hetiru mapa le'ochle taros. Taros is a situation of people who treated their chulin with an extra amount of care, as if it were something that needed to be guarded from. So there were people like that ate their taros Eter chulin, as if it's something that needs special guarding. But even so, even though they had this particular stringency, they accepted upon themselves, they don't, however, have the right to use the mapo method as a means of avoiding netilas yadayim. But a special allowance is made for kohanim. Ravami and Ravasi, who were kohanim, were therefore able to eat without doing netilas yadayim. Rabbi Zera shouldn't really have raised an eyebrow concerning their behavior. Before continuing, we have a nosei, a new topic heading at the outside margin that introduces the new section with the bow tie. The bow tie we already introduced were a series of questions regarding Netilas Yadayim. Here, it's as follows. Hama, we read the introduction, the nosei, the topic heading on the outside margin. Hamachil es chavero. Someone is feeding his friend. Haim ha'ochil. Tzorech litol yadav. Does the one who's eating, now the one who's eating is not handling the food, he is being fed. Does the one who is eating need netilas yadayim? This, by the way, is in contrast with the upcoming bow tie, lower on the end of the narrow lines of Gemara. There we will focus on the one who's feeding, the ma'achil. Does he need to wash his hands? But in any time, we want to focus on the person who is eating. In addition to the bow tie, we have a house form, a house shape that appears, and as you skim ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice the house shape assumes two different directions. Under our Mivneh heading, we have the house featured, and we've indicated Toshma. This is the term that will appear in the house. The Gemara will attempt to bring answers to the question. With the house point facing up, this will be a Hochocha She'ein Tzorech Lito. This will be an attempt to prove in the direction of not requiring the one who is eating should not require, is not required to wash his hands. With the house form inverted, the point facing down, that will be a hochocha, an attempt to show that he does need to do netilas yadayim. So the Gemara, Ibaya Laho, the Gemara is asking, Oichel machmas machil, tzorech netilas yadayim oy loy. Does the person who is eating, who is being fed, the one who is eating as a result of being fed by someone else, does he, the eater, have to do netilas yadayim? Toshma, let's try to answer this from the following, de Rav Huna bar Schira have koi kamei de Rav Hamnuna. Rav Huna was standing in front of Rav Hamnuna, was present there. Bolam le umtza v'ochil. He fed him, umtza is a piece of meat, and he ate. Omarlei, ilav de Rav Hamnuna at lo safina loch. If you weren't Rav Hamnuna, if you weren't someone as careful as in his eating and his practices as Rav Hamnuna, I wouldn't feed you. Safina is to feed. I wouldn't feed you. My taima, why is it that he said this? Lav mishum de zohir. Velo noga, isn't it because that Rav Hamnuna was careful and wouldn't touch the food? We see from this story that Rav Huna was feeding Rav Hamnuna. Apparently, Rav Hamnuna did not wash his hands, and he was feeding him a meal. And Rav Huna is saying, "I wouldn't be feeding you other than the fact that you happen to be Rav Hamnuna, someone who was very careful." Now, Rashi says from this that we are to conclude that you don't require netilas yadayim provided you are careful. In other words, we're not dealing here like we had before necessarily with a Kohen story, but we're dealing with someone who is eating as a result of being fed, and if you are careful, so you don't need to wash your hands. The Gemara says, Loi. That's not the explanation for Rav Huna's comment to Rav Hamnuna. But rather, Rav Huna is saying, the only reason I am feeding you is because Dezor is kodem u'moshiyode mikora. Because Rav Huna knew that Rav Hamnuna was diligent, Zoraz is diligent, and washed his hands at the outset. So someone that you can rely upon as having washed his hands, so you can feed him without actually seeing him, let's say, wash his hands. However, someone else, you have to make sure, before feeding them, you have to make sure that they washed their hands. So from this story, we saw an attempt to prove one way, and then the Gemara pushes off that with an alternative explanation. Therefore, we have to go on trying to answer our question in a definitive fashion. Toshma. So we have an answer. This is an answer that we have provided alongside the Gemara, a long answer marking. You'll notice in the Gemara text itself, a large portion of the upcoming lines we have in a brackets. However, as far as the structure is concerned, from this Toshma till the end of our long answer marking, you can see we have a tuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical descending dashed line, indicating that all of these lines are part of this attempt to answer, a teretz. But after the long answer, the Gemara will also reject this with a response. In the meantime, Toshma, we're still focusing on our question of someone was eating as a result of being fed. What is the story with his need to wash or maybe not? The Amar Rav Zera, Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav, Lo Yitain Odom Prusa Lesoch Piv Shel Shamosh Elim Ken Yoida Yodea Bo Shen Notal Yodov. A shamash is a person who we can call a waiter, someone who's serving food. Very often, his hands were full, and he's working, serving people their meal. So, let's say the waiter comes by with his full hands. Can you put a piece of bread into his mouth? So, Rav is telling us here, you shall not give him to eat, unless you know that he, in this case you have an eater, and thus the eater had washed his hands. So, and we've also noticed we've dashed underlined this, Elim Kenya Deabo Shinot Yodav, indicating this is the main point. There is additional information that the Gemara provides that we have in the brackets. We have a bracket purpose indicator, an explanation, that you can see where we have the star in the margin. Sograyim, we have written the following, that these sograyim, the brackets are l'shem dilug, are for the purpose of skipping. The ikar ha'ochocha bo mimashi kosuv, the main proof or answer is from that which is written, elim ken yodea bo shenota yodav. That is what we already emphasized, and we dashed underline that phrase in the Gemara. B'soch ha'sograyim muvo halochois. Within the bracketed section are laws that are relevant to l'shamosh hamashamesh v'se'uda. These are halachos that are relevant to a shamosh that is serving a meal. So let's see, now that we've presented the attempted proof, if we skip the brackets momentarily, the Gemara will say, Shiny Shamash de Torah. You can't bring a raya from the case of a Shamash to people in general, because the Shamash is different. He is Torah. He's preoccupied with his role of serving the meal. So if you're not sure that he washed his hands, he's the kind of person that would forget to do what he has to do because his mind is on other matters. However, a person who is not preoccupied with other matters, he's simply sitting there waiting to be fed, you could conceivably rely on his having washed his hands ahead of time. Once again, this kind of Gemara leaves you feeling that there isn't a conclusive response to it. In other words, the attempted response we gave, we are, in the end, deflecting it. Now, all that having been said, let's continue with the bracketed section. The hashamosh mevorech al kol kois v'kois. The waiter has to make a new first bracha on each cup of drink that he is given. So let's say he's serving a meal, and in the course of the meal that he's serving, he happens to take a drink of wine. If he wants to take another drink later, he has to make another bracha. In other words, this is unusual, so to speak. In general, if a person sits down himself to have a meal and he makes a bracha on a cup of wine, that bracha will be sufficient for all subsequent cups that he drinks during the meal. The shamash, though, the waiter, is different. Rashi says, "Hashamash yivorach al kos v'kos." A few lines down, "Lefi she'ain keva l'shtias hashamash." There isn't an established or fixed drinking that is characteristic of a waiter. And generally speaking, when we speak about a bracha, one bracha covering additional eating, it's because the person is kavua, he is set, he's sitting down, he's in a position where he is anticipating additional food. That's kavua, this anticipation of additional food or drink. In the case of the shamash, he's not kavua. She'eino yodea im yitnu lo oid. He doesn't know if he will be given another cup. Therefore, his mind literally departs from drinking, meaning his concentration on drinking is severed, or he disconnects from the drinking. So if he drinks one cup, he doesn't know if he's going to get another cup. So as far as he's concerned, he's not going to see another cup. When he does get another cup of wine, that's a new drinking. Therefore, he has to make a new first bracha, new bracha rishona. The Gemara continues, the eino mevorech al kol prusa uprusa. As opposed to the halacha we just had with regard to the drinking, when it comes to eating, prusa literally is a slice of bread, he doesn't have to make a new bracha after he makes a bracha on the first slice. He is confident that bread is something that people won't withhold from him, and he's confident he'll get more pieces of bread. So as far as the halach of bread is concerned, notice we have a little aleph over this where it says eino mevorach al kol prusa prusa, because we have now another opinion regarding the bread. Rabbi Yochanan Omar mevorach al kol prusa prusa. Rabbi Yochanan says that he does have to make a bracha regarding each new piece of bread. The Omar Rav Papa Bishlama de Rav v'Rabbi Yochanan lo kashya. As far as Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, Rav being the aleph point regarding the bread, and Rabbi Yochanan the beis point regarding the bread, there is no machlokes between the two. Ha deika adam chashuv, ha deleka adam chashuv. Rav's halacha is, namely, that you don't have to make a bracha on each subsequent piece of bread, is because there is an adam chashuv, there's an important person at that meal that he is waiting on, that this shamash is waiting on. And because of the presence of the adam chashuv, so there is a feeling that he will guarantee his presence there, or he himself will ensure or guarantee that the shamash gets whatever he wants, as far as food, as far as bread is concerned. The halacha of Rabbi Yochanan that you have to make a bracha on each prusa prusa is hadaleka adam chashuv, where there isn't this important individual present there, so the shamash doesn't have this sense of confidence that he will get whatever he wants, and therefore he will have to make a bracha on each subsequent piece. Just to review the main point, though, before the bracketed section, the Gemara wanted to conclude from the case of the shamash, who is, we said his hands were full, so he's a person who is being fed, and Rav says that you cannot feed him unless you know that he washed beforehand. So that you see from here that one who is eating has to do netilas yadayim beforehand. The Gemara here says, "Shiny shamosh de torid." The case of the shamosh is different, and let us now look at the Rashi. The torid, the shamesh shamasubin, he is preoccupied with serving the guests. V'shocheach shelo notal, he will forget that he didn't wash his hands. V'nogea ba'ochlin sheochal, and he'll end up touching the food that he is. He'll end up touching the food without having done the tilas yadayim. Even though he's touching all the other people's food, that doesn't bother us. That doesn't bother us that he is touching other people's food, even though we're suspicious he didn't wash his hands. The requirement of netila is not a halacha regarding touching food, but regarding the halacha of eating food. So as far as the original halacha or the original question is concerned, someone who is being fed, does he need netilas yadayim or not? While learning this Gemara, from the second answer, the Gemara says that you cannot feed him unless you know that he washed his hands. So that if you go back to the original question of one who is being fed, does he need netilas yadayim? Well, the question might be rephrased as, do you have to know that he washed his hands? So if you're going to prove from the case of the shamash that you have to know that he washed his hands, we would say, no, the shamash is different. There, in the case of the shamash, you have to know that he washed his hands. In general, there is a hand-washing requirement, but you don't have to know that he washed his hands. But as far as the eater himself is concerned, even from this Gemara with the Shamash and the Rashi, one does come away with the feeling that hand washing is necessary. As far as the case of the Shamash is concerned, the only point that we are, let's say, being lenient on is that with regard to other people, you don't have to know that they washed their hands. Let us offer another explanation or another conclusion to this Gemara, which I believe is a simpler conclusion, because structurally what really took place in the Gemara is the question was originally, does a person who is being fed have to wash? The Gemara in the second house, the inverted house, we wanted to prove that yes, there has to be a washing. Then at the end, the Gemara rejected this by saying shiny shamash detorid. Generally speaking, in a structure of Gemara like this, we are rejecting the conclusion that was reached earlier. And it would then come out as follows, that the shamash is different from the regular case, and in a regular case there would not be a need for netilas yadayim. Can we come to such a conclusion? So from the Rashi that we read, I felt it was a little hard to come to that conclusion, but from the Rabbeinu Gershom, it's very clear. The second wide line of the Rabbeinu Gershom commentary, you see, he says, "Shiny shamash de torid." The shamash is different in that he is preoccupied. Klomer v'chayshinon shemo yiga. We're afraid that he will come and touch the food that he is being fed. That while someone is putting food into his mouth, he will end up touching that food. That is in contrast with a standard individual who's not preoccupied with other things, simply sitting calmly, being fed by someone else. He would not need to have netilas yadayim at all, because we're not afraid that he will come to touch the food that he is being fed. Tanu Rabbanan. The Gemara continues with a Tanaic source. Lo yitain odam prusa l'shamosh. Bain shakos biyodo, bain shakos biyodo shalvala bias. Rashi explains, lo yitain odam prusa l'shamosh, be'echod mino orchim ko'omar. The Tanaic source here is addressing one of the guests. You have a waiter who is serving a meal in the home of a host, and there are guests. Why is the guest instructed not to give food to the shamash? Kedei shelo yichos balabayis kishus shoise, so as not to arouse the wrath of the balabayis while he is drinking. The chonko lo yayin. If a person, while he's in the middle of drinking, all of a sudden becomes overcome with rage, he can end up choking. Umaziklo. And that, of course, can be dangerous and hurt him. Ubalav kas nami, and without the wrath factor, mitoch shechosh shelo yichale halechem lochim, because of his fear, seeing the shamosh eating the food that was designed for the guests, humabit umatzitz b'mashizeh nosein, he's going to be looking carefully, staring at what the guest is giving the shamash. Va'kois nishbach miyado, and the cup will fall out of his hand. Va'afilu ha'kois biyad hashamash, and even if the cup is in the cup of beverage is in the hands of the waiter, shema yishpachenu, he might end up spilling it out from his concern. Is the Bach adds midaigas kas balabayas, this fear of the beverage being spilled out as a result of the wrath of the balabayas. So the source is telling us that a person should not give food to the shamash. One of the guests shouldn't feed the shamash, whether the beverage is in the hands of the shamash or in the hands of the balabayas. The source goes on to say, Shema yera devar kalkola basuda, because of this wrath factor or concern factor. Oftentimes there's a certain amount of limited food, and the host designs the food for the guests and not for the waiter. And seeing the waiter eating that food will arouse a sense of anger or concern on the part of the host, and that could have negative ramifications for the person if the host is drinking his beverage while you, the guest, are feeding the shamash, or even in the case that the shamash is holding the beverage and he sees the host glaring at him eating food being offered by one of the guests. That could also lead to this spilling out. This is a halacha that we saw quoted just above, that Rav had quoted, that a shamash that did not wash his hands, well, you cannot feed him. We introduced this question earlier, and on the side, under our topic heading, the nosei, Haim ha-machil boi litol yodov. Does the one who's feeding the food to someone need to wash his hands? Up till now, we discussed the eater. Here, we want to discuss the one who's doing the feeding. In the as the Gemara unfolds, we will notice triangles that appear, and they, too, like we had the houses above, appear in two different directions. So under our Mivneh heading in the outside margin, we have a triangle feature with the point facing up, and we indicate the Toshma is the term that will appear in both cases. The point facing up, Hochacha Deboi, indicates that there is a need for the feeder to wash his hands. And when we see the triangle flipped over, that will be an attempt to show to the contrary that he does not need. Now the Gemara, Ibayalaho, Machil tzorach netilas yadayim o eino tzorach. Does the feeder need to wash his hands before feeding someone else or not? Toshma, the Tani debay Menashe. There's a Tanaic source taught in the yeshiva of Menashe. Rabbon Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Isha madicha es yodo achas b'mayim v'noisenes pas l'vno koton. This is a halacha concerning Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a day that is characterized by a number of restrictions. Famous amongst them are eating and drinking. In addition to that, there's also a restriction in washing oneself. Even a small part of one's body is not to be washed. This halacha says that on Yom Kippur, a woman who is has care of her child, she is allowed to wash one hand. One hand is enough, so to speak, because it sounds from this source because she'll be using that hand to feed her small son, her child. Amru alav al shamay hazaken shelo rotzel lahachil biyado achas. It was reported concerning Shammai, the elder Shammai, the famous Shammai of Hillel Shammai fame, that he did not want to feed with his one hand. Rashi says, "Shelorotz la'achil biyado achas afilu yado achas lorotz la'diach kedei liten pas latinok biyama kipurim umonea mila achilo." he was preoccupied with the prohibition of washing on Yom Kippur that he didn't want to wash even one hand. And as a result of his not washing his hand, he would then end up not feeding his kid. Almo, we see from this that machil tzorach netila. We see from this that there is a very strong need for netila, for one who is feeding someone else. The source continues, by the way, with regard to Shammai HaZaken, who didn't want to feed even with one hand, the gozru alav sheyachil b'shtei yodav. They made a ruling concerning him that he shall give to feed and ostensibly wash both hands. In other words, the concern of the Chachomim of that time regarding Shammai was, you're going to not feed your kid? The child has to eat, even though it's Yom Kippur. A young child is supposed to eat on Yom Kippur. And they viewed his restriction as like going overboard, so to speak, and therefore to make the point, they ruled that he's got to wash both hands and feed his kid. But what we see from this, at this point at least, is that there is a need for the ma'achil to wash his hands. The Gemara says no. From this source, which is specifically a Yom Kippur source, there is no conclusion about feeders in general. Omar Abayi, Hosam Mishum Shivta. Shifta is the name we'll call it a dangerous spirit. It's called a ruach ra. There's a spiritual force that settles upon hands of a person after a night's sleep. When one wakes up in the morning, there is a required netilas yadayim. That required netilas yadayim is regardless of eating. It's simply a necessity the necessity of washing one's hands is to remove this thing called shivta. So since we're talking about Yom Kippur, we're talking about someone who in the morning had not washed their hands. So as a result of there was no morning washing, there has to be a washing, not because they're in the capacity of being a feeder, but a need to remove this ruach ra. However, let us just say we were dealing with someone who was not involved who had already done, let us say, his morning netilas yadayim, and he thereby took care of the ruach ra problem, this bad negative spirit that's on the hands, that's removed, and now he's simply coming to feed someone else. So from this story, we would not conclude that the feeder needs to wash his hands. Toshma. Notice, of course, the triangle is now inverted, so this will be an attempt to show that you don't need. The father of Shmuel met his son Shmuel that was crying. Omar le amai kobochi. So the father asks his son Shmuel, why are you crying? He answers, demachion raboi. My teacher hit me. So the father asks, amai, why did he hit you? The Omar Li, because he told me, Kosofis Livroi Velomoshis Yodoch. The teacher saw me feeding the teacher's son, and he says, you're feeding my son, and you haven't washed your hands. So the father asked, Vamailo Moshis, why didn't you wash your hands? Omar Le, Hu Ochil Vano Mashina. He's eating, I have to wash my hands? Well, that was an explanation the son offered Avuah d'Shmuel Amalei. So Avuah d'Shmuel, upon hearing this explanation, said, "Wow, you know, you're really in the right, and it's terrible that your Rav hit you based on wrong information or wrong knowledge. Lo mistaya de lo gomir. It's like bad enough that he is not learned, that your teacher is not learned." But Mimchanami Mochi, he hits as well. If you look at Rashi under the Gemara commentary, first wide line at the end, Lo Mistaya de Lo Gomir, Lo Dai Lo Shenoboki Behilchus Netila, is it not enough that he doesn't know the laws regarding hand washing? Shahamachil Ein Tzorach Lito, that one who feeds someone else does not need to wash his hands. So from this incident, you see that the machil does not need to wash hands. The Gemara now rules for Hilchasa. Ochel machmas machil tzorech netilas yadayim. That one who is eating as a result of being fed does need netilas yadayim. And we might point out that the way we had explained the Gemara before, based on Rashi and the case of the shiny shamish detorid, would conform to this particular Gemara conclusion, where we had indicated from being medayik in the Rashi that the fear in the case of the shamash was there. You have to know beforehand that he washed his hands because he would forget otherwise. We're assuming he would forget to wash. But other people, we wouldn't assume they forgot to wash, and they would have washed. That was the way we learned the Gemara according to Rashi. And the conclusion, learning it that way, would be like the Gemara concludes here, that one who eats as a result of being fed does need to wash his hands. The second conclusion the Gemara says, Machil eino tzorech netilas yadayim. This is the way we concluded from the story with Shmuel and his father, that one who is feeding someone else does not have to wash his hands. As we continue in the Gemara, we encounter a new Mishnah, and we also have a topic heading. Under our Noseh heading, we have written, Kirva proximity bein bosor v'cholov. Meat and milk. Now, we talk about proximity or closeness. One point will be ba'arizo achas, in the same package, where you have meat and milk, or meat and cheese in the same wrapping. And bein shnei anoshim ha'oichlem yachad. An issue concerning two people eating at the same table, in proximity of one another, one eating meat and one eating milk, or dairy. The Mishnah. Tzorer odom boser ugvino b'mitpachas achas. A person can tie up meat and cheese in one cloth, ubilvad shelo yu noigin ze bozar, provided that while they're wrapped together, they're not touching one another. The meat is not touching the cheese. Rabon Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, shnei achsonoim oichlim al shulchan echod. Ze boser v'ze gvino. Two achsonim are guests, the people that are guests in a motel or in other circumstances that they are guests somewhere. They can eat one meat, the other dairy. The ein choshin, and we're not afraid of some type of switch around taking place, that the one who is, let's say, eating the meat will then take from the other guest that's eating the dairy and thereby be in violation of the halachas concerning boser b'cholov. The Gemara asks, regarding the wrapping of meat and dairy in the same cloth, the Mishnah was insistent on they're not touching one another. The Gemara asks, so what, even if they touch one another, v'chino ge'a zeh bozeh ma'yhavi, even if they do touch one another, so what? Sonein b'tsonein hu. It's two cold items. In other words, as long as you don't have the presence of heat, if it's two cold items, then the general fear of one absorbing from the other falls away. There's no absorption when you're dealing with tzonein. And therefore, if the piece of meat isn't going to absorb into its interior any of the dairy, so there's no problem. Amar Abaye, you think there's no problem. Nehi deklipa loboi, granted that there's no absorption called into its surface. Hadocha mi loboi, but a rinsing off would you not require? You certainly would. Let's go over this again. When you have two items touching one another, if one happens to be hot, so we say it will absorb into its surface layer, the other material. So that if you, let's say, you had a hot piece of meat, and it came into contact with some dairy, you would have to peel off a thin layer of the meat, and that peeling off is called klipa. that would represent a problem. But the Gemara answers, and its answer goes so far as to say, even if it's two cold items, the meat and cheese, the meat having come into contact with the cheese, you nevertheless, even if they were both cold, you would still have to rinse off the meat. So we're telling you here, better not to get involved with any problem, and make sure when you wrap the two up in the same wrapping, that the meat is not in contact with the dairy. Because if it would become in contact with the dairy, a problem would arise. The solution to the problem would be rinsing off the meat, but we're trying to set up a situation where you don't have to get involved with solutions in the first place. Who knows? You can't necessarily rely on people doing the necessary rinsing afterwards. Hence, the Mishnah says, you can wrap the two together, but make sure they don't touch each other. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Omer Shnei Achsanoim Ochlin Al Shulchan. The Mishnah said in his name that two guests can eat at the same table, one dairy and one meat, and we're not afraid that one will eat from the other's food. Omer Rav Chonon Bar Ami Omer Shmuel Lo Shanu Elo She'ein Makirin Ze Eze. This leniency of Rav Shimon Gamliel applies only if the two don't know one another, they don't recognize one another, they're not familiar with one another. Avo makirin ze eze. If you have two people that are guests at a location, they happen to be familiar with one another, they're friendly with one another, usser. Then this leniency of them eating together at the same table, just right next to each other, would not be allowed, because of their familiarity with one another is a fear that one will eat from the other's food. Tanyo nami hochi. Rabbi Shimon Aliyo Omer, Shnei Achsanoim Shinis Archu Lepundik Echad. Two guests that are staying at the same inn. Ze bo min hatzofon, veze bo min hadorom. One comes from the north, the other comes from the south. An indication that they probably don't know one another. Ze bo b'chatichoso, veze bo b'gvinoso. Ochlin al shulchan echad, ze boser veze gvino. The one comes with his chatichos, his piece of meat. The other comes with his cheese. They can sit and eat at the same table. One is eating meat, the other eating cheese. The ein choshishin. And we're not afraid. We're not afraid that one will eat from the other. And as we said in our explanation, being that one comes from the north, the other comes from the south, they probably don't recognize, they don't know each other. So there's no fear of one eating from the other. V'lo osru elo betfisa achas. The rabbis did not issue a prohibition other than the case of tfisa achas. Now Rashi says tfisa achas is bekerech echad, which might be explained as the prohibition of meat and cheese together is only if it's in one package. So the Gemara asks, tfisa achas sakadaitoch? When learning this source, why do you have to introduce the issue of a package? If you want to talk about a package, then you don't have to discuss people eating at the same table. Even without the table, even without a meal being eaten together, if you're dealing with a package, there is still a problem. So, if we're learning a source concerning two guests, why are you introducing at the end of the source something to do with a package? Elo ke'ein tfiso achas. The Tosus explains this means that when the Chachamim said that two guests who don't recognize are able to eat at the same table, one meat and one the other dairy, that's true, and there is no restriction unless it's a case of something like Tfisachas. Tosus explains a case where they recognize one another, and that, by the way, would be that explanation fits in very well with the intent of the Gemara to bring this Tanaic source as a support to that which Shmuel taught just before. Shmuel qualified the leniency of Shmuel and Leo if they don't recognize one another, but if they do recognize one another, then there is a prohibition. And where in this source is there a support to that idea where they recognize one another? That is what it says at the end of the source, where we're explaining Ke'ein Tfisa Achas, like the Tosus explains, where they do recognize one another. So you have a Tanaic source saying that where they recognize one another, they would not be allowed to eat one dairy, the other meat at the same table, just like Shmuel taught. le Rav Yemar bar Shalmi ol Abaye. Rav Yemar asks Abaye, Shnei achin umakpidin ze al ze mahu. Let's say you have two brothers. Now, two brothers recognize, they know each other. However, they're not at the best of terms with one another. Makpidim, the two of them are not, as we say, on good terms with one another. One wouldn't allow the other to eat from his food, so that each one will keep his own food to himself. So what is the halacha then? On the one hand, they do recognize each other. That would be a reason for prohibiting them eating together at the same table, one dairy, one meat. On the other hand, they're makpinim zalzeh. So what's the halacha? Omar le. So Abaye answers. He answers with a phrase. However, before we read the phrase, we're going to give the gist of what Abaye says. It says, listen, it's true that these two brothers happen to be not at the best of terms with one another, but as far as objectively speaking, these are two people that recognize each other. If we allow them, because of their personal circumstances, to eat together, people are going to get the wrong idea about the halacha. They're going to think that we have multiple standards, if you will. And in formulating halacha, we like to have uniformity. So that's the gist of what we're teaching here. We're interested in uniformity. And as a result of that, even though these two brothers happen to be makbid on one another, nevertheless, since they recognize one another, we want to preserve the halacha of those who recognize one another. There is a restriction, and we want to guarantee or support that halacha across the boards. Now, in the Gemara, there's a phrase that's used, and it's a borrowed expression from Maseches Psachim that has to do with making decorative baked goods, which could, because of their elaborateness, could result in their becoming chametz. However, if someone has a mold, and the form and the mold itself has all of the details and decorative features in it, the same decorative or elaborate baked good could be made without any delay, be made rapidly, without getting involved with a chametz problem. However, when people see these different cakes, even though they may look the same, if we allow one, and because it won't become chametz because of the fact they have this effective mold, as opposed to others who don't have the same thing, so the halacha won't be uniform, and people will think you can, in general, make elaborate cakes, and thereby leading to a chametz problem. Therefore, they banned all elaborate kinds of cakes that are made with these molds. Using that idea, even though these two brothers happen to be makbid one another, we ban them from eating together to preserve the halacha of when you have two people that recognize one another, they are not to eat together. Now, we read this in the Gemara. Omar le. So regarding the question of the brothers that are makbid one another, Yomru, if we were to allow them to eat together, people would say, Kol hasrike nasurin, usrike baitus mutarin. Baitus was the name of a family that had very effective molds in making their cakes. But as we said before, people will say, "Hey, for these people it's aser, for these people it's mutter." And we said that would result in this lack of uniformity in halacha. The Gemara asks, "Well, uletameich, according to you, who are you're going to issue this restriction because otherwise people will come to erroneous conclusions?" Hal di Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan. Well, what about the following halacha, which seems to violate your concern? It says, "Mi she'ein lo ela cholok echod, someone who has only one article of clothing, mutar lechabso becholo shemoed." even though Chol HaMoed, the intermediate days of holidays, the middle days, days where we have a certain amount of leniency as opposed to the holidays themselves, the days of Chol HaMoed, though we know, are usur, is one is restricted in engaging in numerous malachas, different activities, including washing of clothing. However, we have a halacha here that says that if someone has only one article of clothing, after wearing it for a couple of days, it's impossible to continue wearing without washing it. So there's an allowance for him to wash in Chol HaMoed. Well, so what about our original sentiment or fear? People will yomru kol hasrike nasurin hasrike baidus mutarin. And here we don't have to translate the phrase anymore. The gist of it is, well, there seems to be, you're applying a double standard, and as a result of that, people will see him washing, and they'll come to the conclusion, in general, people can wash. The Gemara answers, Hosam, in that case, people are not going to come to an incorrect conclusion. Ha'omar Mor Bravashi said concerning the fellow who's washing his garment on Chol HaMoed, a zoiroi moichiach olav. The Rashi explains a zoiroi moichiach olav ho ezor tomid hu kavua bechaluko. The ezor is a type of belt, if you will. It's a piece of material that wraps around a person who's wearing a garment. Let's say a person is wearing a robe. The robe is called the chaluk, and wrapped around that is an azor. So, if a person has only one robe, what happens? He takes the azor out of the robe, ukshu poshet chaluko v'lovesh choluk acher, notel ho azor mizeh v'kovo bazeh. In general, when a person, not our case here, if a guy's got only one choluk, in general, a person who has to wash his choluk, he takes the azor, the belt, out of one robe, and puts on his other chaluk and uses the belt around the second chaluk while he's washing the first one. V'zeh she'ein lo achir, this person who's washing his chaluk, who doesn't have another robe, mechapso im ezoro. V'ho roeh kishu mechapso ve'ezoro imo yodea she'ein lo chaluk achir. V'lochein hitiru lo chachomim. When this person is washing his robe, and doesn't have another robe, he ends up washing the robe with the azor in it. So people see that he's washing his robe with the azor still in it. He must be a person that doesn't have another one. And people will understand that, in general, it's usur to wash clothing on Chol HaMoed. They won't come to conclude that one in general is allowed. And an exception is made for someone that has no other clothing. However, this obvious difference is not the case in the two cases we cited before. The case with the chometz and the molds, and the case of the two brothers. In the case of the two brothers, which was the topic of our discussion, there, people don't know that they're at odds with one another. They will simply see two people that know each other eating together, and they'll come to the wrong conclusion that people in general who recognize one another are allowed to eat one dairy and one meat, which can, in fact, lead to problems. Therefore, there was an across-the-boards prohibition of people recognizing one another eating together, unless, even if they happen to be at odds with one another. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.